Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Jim Cannon, head of OEM and markets at Mettler Toledo Thornton. Jim has over 35 years of experience managing, designing, and developing ultra-pure water treatment and technology. Jim is currently involved in the standards and regulatory organizations, including the Facilities and Liquid Chemicals Committee, Reclaim, Reuse, Recycle Task Force, and the UPW Task Force. Welcome to the podcast, Jim.
Well, Daniel, thank you. I'm glad to be here and hopefully be able to share some information about where the semiconductor industry is going today.
Right. So first, can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the semiconductor industry originally?
Certainly. It's sort of a little convoluted. I had finished 3 degrees in the life sciences, biology, microbiology, biophysics, and changed directions, went to business school, was finishing that, doing job interviews, and actually was looking at a job at Schlitz Brewing in marketing. But a good friend of mine asked me to interview with Corning Science because her father was a vice president there. So as a favor to her, I did. I flew to Houston. Unfortunately, my luggage went to Honolulu, and there was a bunch of mix-ups. And so I ended up interviewing in a football t-shirt, jeans, and cowboy boots. And I flew back thinking, well, I've done my favor. Well, Corning Science offered me a job. So I ended up at Corning Science and their laboratory products, the water business, get hired away into Boston at Barnstead, who was heavily involved in the semiconductor. And one thing led to another, and I've been in the semiconductor now for over 35 years. And as you mentioned, I'm on multiple task forces and then became involved with Thornton. We were founded in 1964 by Dr. Richard Thornton, who was chairman of electrical engineering at MIT. Dr. Thornton and Dr. Balswell were the ones that actually created the first concentric conductivity sensor, which is the standard today. And Dr. Thornton did all the scientific work to prove the actual resistivity of ultrapure water, which is the standard today for semiconductor. We were the first to use microprocessors and transmitters. We introduced multi-channel, multi-parameter transmitters. So, you know, one thing led to another, and then been involved with the ultra-pure water and semiconductor ever since.
Right. And how did you guys become Mettler, Toledo, Thornton? So you went to Thornton and there was some acquisition?
Yes, Thornton had worked with Mettler, Toledo for many years. We were a private company. We private labeled products to one of the divisions at Mettler, Toledo, and they made pH sensors for Thornton. And when Dr. Thornton decided that we wouldn't be a private company and decided to sell the company, the logical partner was Mettler Toledo, the process analytics division. So we're in the process analytics division, which is Thornton, Ingold, Pendotech, Autochem. And that happened in early 2000. So we've been part of the Mettler Toledo family since then.
That's a familiar story in the semiconductor industry. So what changes are you observing in semi, and what is driving the current growth?
Well, you know, semiconductors, ICs, are considered probably the most complex apparatus ever created by humans. They're considered one of the top 10 inventions of mankind over the past 1,000 years. And going forward, semiconductors are going to contribute about $145 trillion to the GDP of the globe. What's driving it is AI, the explosion of AI, the need for faster, better graphics. Just look what happened with NVIDIA recently. Cloud computing, as more and more companies are going to cloud computing, the drive for better chips, better data centers, automotive applications. And I'm not talking electric cars. I'm talking your standard vehicle that between $5,000 and $6,000 of the cost of that car is now electronics. And the industry is being challenged with miniaturization of chips, 3D architecture, going vertical on the chips, and also the increase in the wafer size, going to the 300 millimeter, and also the line width between circuits. We're now down below 3 nanometers. And to put that in perspective, a human hair is about 100,000 nanometers in diameter. So you can imagine we're down to the molecular level. So the need to control the ultra-pure water is critical across all that. In addition, this super cycle in semiconductor is also being driven by some supply chain issues and also some geopolitical issues globally.
Right. Hey, you know, many countries and governments are working to promote the growth and expansion of the industry. But what do you see are the challenges to this?
Well, we're all aware in the U.S. of the CHIPS Act, which is funding a lot of growth and new fabs and modernization of existing fabs. But other countries, China, Korea, Japan, Germany, France, have basically put in place their own CHIPS Acts to promote semiconductor there. And countries, cities, states want semiconductor. I mean, they're viewing it as a high-tech industry with excellent jobs, and they support other local industries and the city or town infrastructure. In fact, the estimate is that a fab has actually about a 6.7 multiplier of the number of jobs in the area that are created because of the fab. Now, the challenge is a large fab will use about 10 million gallons of water per day. Well, that's a major challenge when you put a fab in, all of a sudden the water table starts to collapse. So many countries and cities are now putting legal requirements on the volume of water that can be taken by a fab per day. And some have put in actual legal requirements of 80% reclaim recovery. And that is being increased to 85% to 90%. So a fab that relies on ultra-pure water as the universal solvent and cleaning agent needs to figure out how to be sustainable with water and electricity, the electricity grid. So those are the two of the big challenges to semiconductor today.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned sustainability, and you're involved with the SEMI Task Force for Sustainability. What is the direction of the industry to reach their goals?
Well, the SEMI Task Force, for years we've talked about reclaim, reuse, recycle. And if you look at the water side, the water cycle, there's the pretreatment, the purification, then that ultra-pure water goes to what are called the tools. It could be an RCA process, wet bench, photolithography, epitaxy, or CMP. And that water typically would just, after being used, would go to waste. Well, the task force has been looking at how can we increase recycling to reduce incoming consumption by 80%. Because when you think about it, that it takes about 32 liters just to make a single microchip. It takes 14,000 liters to make a single smartphone. That's a massive amount of water. So the SEMI Task Force is developing guidelines to help provide a strategy to either an existing, a legacy fab, or new fabs on how to plan and how to take steps to reduce their water footprint and improve sustainability.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, when I started in the industry, I started here in Silicon Valley and I was at a fab, and, you know, the water use was just outrageous. And the water quality when we, you know, expelled from the fab was just ridiculous. And as you said, the water table was seriously challenged. And that's why there's no fabs in Silicon Valley anymore. And now we're building them in the desert. We're building them in Ohio. I mean, you know, how are we going to do this? You know, why is ultra pure water critical to the semiconductor fab? And what volume of ultra pure water do they use in the process? You know, Arizona, Ohio, where are we going to get this water?
Well, that's exactly the challenge. Luckily, Arizona does have a deep aquifer, but that doesn't matter. you can't keep draining the aquifer, or you can't, you look at the big Intel fab in Columbus, Ohio. Well, Columbus isn't sitting on the Ohio or the Mississippi River or the Allegheny. So they're gonna have to get that water somewhere. And ultra pure water is the universal solvent, universal cleaning agent. They've tried gases, they've tried chemicals to clean the wafers between every step of the process. But ultra-pure water is aggressive. Ultra-pure water does not want to stay pure. It will clean off anything. So ultra-pure water is used in the rinsing and cleaning after every manufacturing step, through chemicals, metal oxides, organics. So it's used in epitaxy, photolithography, etching, stripping, doping, CMP. And I'll give you an example. An individual RCA bench or a wet bench for cleaning will consume about 245 million liters of water per year. And a large fab could have 50 to 100 of these benches. Now, typically, when they go through the process, the wafers will be put into the bath, and they'll go through anywhere from 4 to 6 rinses. But the reality is, after that first rinse, that second, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth rinse, that water is basically still ultra pure water. And instead of discharging, that can be brought back to the process and may not need to even undergo any further purification. But typically, that had all gone to a central waste stream. The same holds for even the reject from a reverse osmosis system. That reject water, though it sounds horrible, it's reject. Well, that reject water actually went through multiple pre-treatment steps before it went to the RO. So that reject water is purer than the feed water coming to the facility. So that reject water could be brought back to the process. So ultra-pure water is critical across everything. And whether you take it and take it back to the process, or take it to another use, scrubbers, cooling towers, other areas you can use it.
I remember seeing trucks of water being brought in Taiwan when I was at TSMC, and it just boggled the mind that they would have to truck in water, but they have to use so much water. So what are some of the steps that are being taken or implemented by semiconductor fabs to improve sustainability?
Well, the fab has to look at their entire water cycle. Now, on the committee, on the what's now called the Energy and Water Sustainability Committee, we've been looking at this process. We've been looking at how can we provide them a strategy. And there's multiple challenges. One, you have the new fabs where you can design in waste streams where you could take the waste stream from a wet bench and divert it based on analytics, measure the resistivity of that water, and decide, and the TOC, and decide to send it back to the front end of the process. In legacy or older fabs, all that piping is already embedded in the walls and the process. That makes it a little bit of a challenge. And if you try and think about handling the entire process at once, it's like trying to eat an elephant with one bite. You can't do it. You got to take some small bites. So a couple of things we have done on the committee is think about different strategies. One, where you have a centralized end of pipe reclamation, where the main fab effluent stream is collected and treated by a centralized. But then you have a mixture of all the different chemicals, everything from hydrofluoric to ammonia to metal oxides to the pumice from the CMP process. So that becomes a major challenge. So for that strategy, what you want to start looking at, and this applies heavily to an old legacy centralized system, is start looking at some specific areas, like the UPW rinse water, all right? Water that comes off that tool, as I talked about, like a wet bench, you can probably take from the second, third, or fourth rinse and bring it right back to the process. When a tool is idle, they will keep that water running through. You do not want stagnant water on that tool. So even if a tool is not being used, water's flowing. Well, that water should not go to drain. You need to route that water right back. So, and that's something that can be done in a legacy system. And again, specialty treatment. Start thinking about specialty treatment. You have to treat. Hydrofluoric is an acid that's used across the semiconductor industry. But that hydrofluoric has to be neutralized. And you don't want to mix it with other things. So you need to set up specialty treatment of hydrofluoric or ammonia. And these can be set aside by themselves. The other, as you design a new fab, thinking about a decentralized segregation approach, where the every tool is piped into its own segregation waistline, so that now you are looking at recovering a very high percentage. And this is where you can start approaching 80 or 90% recovery of that water, either to reclaim or to reuse. But if you, as I said before, if you try and tackle the entire process at one time, it will seem insurmountable. You want to target the highest areas of UPW, make it more manageable. And I'll give you a quick example. A reverse osmosis system. One of the measurements is called percent recovery, which is the amount of water that you process. So let's use simple numbers. Let's say I have 100 liters coming into my RRO and I run it at 80% recovery. That means 80 liters is coming to process, 20 liters down the drain. Well, when you scale that up and you're talking cubic meters per hour production, that's a high volume of water going to reject. As I mentioned, that reject water has already gone through pretreatment. So there's no reason you can't take that reject water back to the front of the system and actually dilute your feed water, because your reject water is cleaner than your feed water. So you can start recovering in that way. Then attack your wet bench. The wet benches are the biggest user of ultrapure water in the facility. One, make sure when they're idle, that water is diverted. And also use your analytics to determine that, hey, my second or third rinse, I can bring that right back to the front of the process. Now, not asking them, and this is not part of the strategies we laid forth the committee, to say, well, we aren't going to do six rinses anymore, we're going to do one rinse. No, that process has been established of that's what they need to do. But that doesn't mean that second, third, fourth, and fifth or sixth rinse can't be diverted back to the front of the process. So the committee has tried to lay out strategies and guidelines to help a fab facility start to become much more sustainable. Because think about this, it's not only the water, but the amount of energy used to purify, to run the RO, the pumps, everything else. If I can start recovering more water, I can reduce my energy footprint at the same time. So there's a variety of ways we're tackling this from the committee. And hopefully the industry, and I know the industry is aware of it, sustainability is one of the biggest topics in all of the semi meetings. So it's going forward, it's making great progress.
Understood. So final question, how is Mettler Toledo Thornton involved in providing instrumentation to help with improving sustainability and reducing the volume of UPW sent to waste? I mean, you know, here's the company pitch, right?
Here's the advertisement, okay? I'll try and keep it tight. One of the key measurements in semiconductor is resistivity, the resistivity of the water, the amount of ions in the water. And they run at what's theoretically pure water, which is 18.18 megohm per centimeter, rounded to 18.2. And when that drops to 18.1 or 18.0, they consider that dirty water. But here's the challenge. Ultrapure water sensors, because conductivity or resistivity are temperature dependent, measuring inline in the water, the ambient temperature outside of that sensor on the back of the sensor has for years impacted the accuracy or the noise of that sensor. So your sensor is trying to determine whether the ambient temperature or the water temperature is real. And if it looks at the wrong temperature, what happens is it will report out a resistivity that is lower, and that facility may start diverting that water to drain. Well, our engineers and R&D developed what we call the UPW, Ultrapure Water Unicon, Universal Conductivity Sensor, whereby that ambient temperature effect has been eliminated. Thereby, you have higher accuracy and less noise, so there's not the chance of diverting the water. For TOC, our TOC online instrument uses 80% less water than any other TOC instrument on the market. Now, that might not seem like much because you're not using that much water, but I know one fab on the West Coast, they have 50 TOCs in one fab, just one fab alone. So think about it. If you could reduce the waste discharge from your TOCs by 80% times 50, that's a huge number. And the other is things like measuring silica on your resin beds. Silica is like the canary in the mine. It tells you if your mixed bed resin is nearing exhaustion. Now, for years, some would just change or regenerate that resin on a set timetable, not looking at the resin capacity. Well, if you do that, you're just going to waste chemicals and waste water. By measuring your silica online, that provides you real analytics to predict so you don't waste chemicals or water. So all of these analytics, and whether it's dissolved oxygen, ozone, resistivity, TOC, silica, sodium, or real-time microbial, more analytics don't make better water. More analytics will save you money and give you better quality. And these analytics all we've embedded in what we call ISM, intelligent sensor management. So these sensors will tell you when they need to be calibrated. They will tell you if they're out of specification. And you don't have to guess. They do it for you. So we bring quite a product portfolio to the semiconductor industry. We're trying to always improve. For example, we have special conductivity sensors for the treatment and neutralization of hydrofluoric waste. We have special pH sensors for that. So we cover the entire water cycle within semiconductor and UPW. And we've been a partner in Semi and UPW for over 40 years. That's the company pitch.
Impressive. Hey, thank you, Jim, for your time. And it's a pleasure meeting you. And hopefully we can get together sometime when you're out in Silicon Valley. And it'd be a pleasure talking to you again later on and getting an update.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed it. And hopefully I shared some information that'll be useful to everyone. Thank you very much.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.